I trust you've come prepared to hear God speak to us through His Word. The very breathed out words of God is what we have access to today. Our text this morning will be in Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. We have been talking about the whole arena of work as depicted by these little Lego guys, right? All the different occupations represented, and talking about the ordinary life of the Christian. Not the life of the ordinary Christian, but the ordinary life of the Christian. The parts of our lives that maybe don't seem to be particularly exciting. They're sort of run-of-the-mill. They're Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. That's the part that we've been zeroing in on to talk about over the course of this month here in May. And we need to be challenged in terms of our work. We've talked about how your work matters to God, first and foremost. God cares about little things. He cares about the work of the garden that He established Adam to perform, to cultivate, to develop the creation. That mattered. Gardening matters. So your work matters to God. And then we talked about how your work matters to others. That work is one of the ways in which we serve one another and we love one another. And when I undertake a task, there's ripple effects. It has impact for other people, whether that's by helping to build a solid structure, helping people to organize their finances well, if you're in that domain, or assembling parts for an automobile, if you're a medical person and helping people feel better and address some of their ailments. So our work matters to others. If we do our jobs well, whether that's paid or unpaid, it matters. It matters to others. And your work matters to you. We talked about how we need our work, not just because we get a paycheck from it, if we do, but we need our work because we've been created to work. You know, I talk to a person that's discouraged, talk to somebody who's out of work, not able to do what they maybe had been able to do previously. That's a recipe for discouragement. We shouldn't find our identity in it. It's not the totality of who we are, but we have been made to do tasks, to labor. Your work matters to you. So all those are important facets of this. And again, we need to be challenged with that. We need to be challenged with work ethic. We need to be challenged with how we think about our work. It's not just something to be endured. It's not just something to dread. Even if I have a difficult job, it's something that I ought to come to value and understand it properly before God. So we need that challenge. But we also need to hear a challenge regarding rest. Work is not the only thing. And your rest matters too. So God has established a certain rhythm for work and rest. And I think we need to have a challenge on that end of the spectrum as well. Because we live in a world that oftentimes is given to a great deal of recreation, leisure time. I was just at a soccer tournament up north with one of my kids. It was an all-weekend tournament, although we just kind of came back after the Saturday. But, man, there's a lot of people up there. we are a leisure-oriented culture. We get 2 days off per week. Most people do, not everybody. Everybody's schedule is a little bit different. But as a culture, we kind of have this common expectation of maybe having a five-day work week with 2 weeks, 2 days off. 5 days on and 2 days off, or two weeks off would be a pretty good schedule, right? But yeah, 2 days off per week. And so that's kind of how we roll, and we value our leisure time and those sorts of things. So in some ways, maybe that the emphasis needs to be on our work. We already are pretty good at this rest thing and leisure thing and entertainment thing. But I think there's a whole other sense in which we're not really very good at that. We have some tendencies in our modern culture to let work invade every area of our lives, every nook and cranny. And we have these things called cell phones. Mine's a slider phone. I'm a little bit behind, but you're always in touch, right? So it's easy to just let work kind of invade every day. And so, yes, we might enjoy leisure, but we never maybe totally detach. We're always able to be reached. And sometimes some of the things we do for rest are not restful. They're not rejuvenating. They maybe don't qualify. Yes, they're leisure time activities, but sometimes they don't contribute to a sense of renewal and rejuvenation. This area of kind of being a workaholic is in their makeup, that they always feel the need to be having to be accomplishing a task. And so for some, this is harder to think of detaching yourself from your work. So I think we need both of these challenges. We need a challenge in the arena of work, and we need a challenge in the arena of rest. And so for this week, we're going to look in this area of rest. Bill Gates gave this statement. Yes, that Bill Gates, the great theologian, Bill Gates. He says, just in terms of allocation of time resources, religion is not very efficient. There's a lot more I could be doing on a Sunday morning. And he states a very secular perspective that, I've got other things to do than to stop what I'm doing and give, in any sense, a day over to rest. And we might look at this again as being just a very secular mindset. Bill Gates is not a Christian. He's not in any way oriented around the Scriptures. But I think this is the sentiment of a lot of believers too. I don't think this is just a Bill Gates thing. I think we have a hard time wrapping our heads around, as Christians, professing believers, wrapping our heads around the value, the necessity of rest when there's lots to do. Okay? So we need to hear from God's Word in this way. Now, the primary contribution of the Scriptures in this domain is the Sabbath. Okay, that's the primary thing that is addressed, and that's why we want to look at Exodus chapter 20, beginning in verse 8 this morning. Exodus 20, verse 8. Hear the word of the Lord. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. May God add His blessing to the reading of His Word. So God determined that one day in seven was to be distinct, holy, set apart, different than the other 6 days of the week. Every other period of time we might be able to think about is governed by sun, moon, and stars. We're able to trace it. The day is one rotation of the earth, right? The month has to do with the lunar cycles, and then the year, of course, is one rotation of the earth, one orbit of the earth around the sun, right? And all of you science people can correct my inexact terms here, but there's an explanation for each of those given periods of time, a day, a month, a year, but a week is arbitrary. It is simply God's established design or rhythm for work and rest that He set out and declared to us in His Word. Now, one of the questions that we have to ask, and maybe you're already asking it, is the Sabbath relevant for the contemporary Christian? This is a big question. Okay, is this pertinent for us? We're not Jewish people, right? Some have suggested that that this commandment does not apply because it's not reiterated at all in the New Testament. So it's an Old Testament thing. All right, so we kind of have to sort through that. And there are a great many contemporary evangelical Christians and churches who don't see any place at all for the Sabbath. They don't see this to be a pertinent conversation or a binding instruction. Okay, so you have to kind of say that there's good people. There's good people who study the Bible and preach the Bible. Good churches who just don't see this as being an issue at all. But I want to suggest to you that it is and that it should be. All right. And I want to try to bring some perspective, both biblical and historical perspective, to understanding this. And I would suggest that it is relevant for the contemporary Christian for these reasons. First, it's rooted in creation. We see that here in Exodus chapter 20. Remember the Sabbath. And he goes on to say there at the close in verse 11, "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth." So the Sabbath was a creation thing, not a Jewish thing. It was, and if we go back to Genesis chapter 2, we would find there that God created Adam and Eve. He created all that he created. He pronounced it good. And then he rested on the seventh day and he hallowed that seventh day. He sanctified it. He set it apart. Not because he was tired, but because he was establishing a pattern for us. Right? God did not need to rest, but he established that pattern for us. So it's a creation pattern. It was observed and affirmed by Jesus. The Sabbath was observed and affirmed by Jesus. Now, at first glance, you say, well, didn't Jesus? Jesus got into all sorts of trouble regarding the Sabbath, did he not? Because he kept breaking the Sabbath, made the religious leaders upset. Well, the reality is Jesus didn't break the Sabbath. He broke their additional restrictions and all the additional things that they attached to the Sabbath. They had their own sets of rules and how many steps you could walk and what you could and couldn't pick up and all of these things. Jesus observed the Sabbath. Matter of fact, he did what you ought to do on the Sabbath. He healed people. He brought health to people. It was a day of rejuvenation, a life-giving day. Sabbath was created for man, not man for the Sabbath, right? I mean, God created this for our good, for our benefit, for our health. And in Jesus' ministry, in his observation of the Sabbath, he lived the Sabbath to the full. And he used it for the purpose for which it was intended. We also see that the Sabbath observance, Sabbath rest, was the practice of the early church. Now, this leads us a little bit into the shift from the Jewish Sabbath, the Saturday Sabbath, to what might be termed the Christian Sabbath, the Sunday Sabbath. And that hinged, of course, on the resurrection of Jesus Christ on the first day of the week. And we begin to then see the pattern of the church gathering in commemoration of that great victory that was achieved in the resurrection and the work of Christ. But the early church gathered regularly on the first day. That was their pattern. It was also part of God's unchanging moral law. We look at the Ten Commandments, and there's a lot of other aspects of ceremonial law, things that were specific to the Jews, right? In terms of kosher eating practices and ways of dressing and not mixing of fabrics and all these distinctive things that were meant to set the Jewish people apart. But this is the Ten Commandments. This is the core of God's unchanging moral law. And so I think we have to be very careful. We better think through it before we choose to disregard one of the ten. Right? Spurgeon, no, actually Moody. I have a quote here from D.L. Moody, great preacher from 19th century, the Sabbath was binding in Eden, and it has been enforced ever since. This fourth commandment begins with the word remember, showing that the Sabbath already existed when God wrote the law on the tablets of stone at Sinai. How can men claim that this one commandment has been done away with when they will admit that the other nine are still binding? So he cites two things here that are very interesting. Talks about how this commandment opens with remember. Remember the Sabbath. In a very real sense, God wasn't establishing the Sabbath at this point. He was simply calling on the Jewish people to remember that He had sanctified that one day. He took them back to Genesis 2. Remember. But then he also points out here that, again, we will acknowledge that all of these are the moral law of God, the unchanging moral law of God, and yet for some reason the Sabbath one often gets lifted out as an exception. And so Moody is kind of calling us on our inconsistency there. So it was part of God's unchanging moral law. And it spoke, the Sabbath rest, spoke of creation and recreation. That it was intended to help redirect their thoughts and their worldview around creation. Right? That was kind of the basis for this. For in 6 days, God created the heavens and the earth. And so it was an opportunity every week in the midst of your labors, and you're holding everything together, right, in your place of work, but one day out of seven, you were to stop and remember that actually God is the creator. And God is the sustainer. And you are dependent upon His grace and His mercy and His provision. And so this is part of what it was supposed to reflect. But in the Christian Sabbath, we have this additional aspect here now of the resurrection. Of what God has done to do a work of recreation. He's done something new. He's taken what was now broken, and he's raised it back to life. And so we have this additional sort of commemoration that this day holds for us. Justin Martyr, writing in the second century, said this. He said, "Sunday is the day on which we all hold our common assembly, because it is the first day on which God, having wrought a change in the darkness and matter, made the world," there's creation, "and Jesus Christ our Savior on the same day rose from the dead." So there in the second century, in the early church, they're articulating why that day shifted from Saturday to Sunday and the significance of how it reminds us of God's great work of creation and recreation. So for all these reasons, I'm going to suggest to you that the Sabbath rest is a relevant, critical topic for us as followers of Jesus Christ. I also want to direct you just for a moment to church history, because I think it's important. C.S. Lewis warned us about chronological snobbery. We have a tendency to view everything from our own particular setting, our own viewpoint. We might call it egocentrism. A person who's egocentric. We're all egocentric, by the way. We all view things from our own point of view. And we have to be aware of that. We have to be aware of the fact that we have blind spots. We look back through church history and we're saying, oh yeah, those people there, they had that funny monk thing going, you know, where they were abandoning all these, you know, food and sitting on tall poles for days at a time. I'm glad we got that sorted out. But we forget that we have our own blind spots. All right? So I want to just direct you to a couple statements that are pretty consistent and representative of how the church has viewed the Lord's Day, Sunday, the Christian Sabbath. And the first statement here is out of the Westminster Confession. We have Presbyterian origins. It's a larger document. I just pulled out one small section on the Sabbath. "As it is the law of nature that in general a due proportion of time be set apart for the worship of God, so in His Word, by a positive, moral, and perpetual commandment, binding all men in all ages, He has particularly appointed one day in seven for a Sabbath to be kept holy unto Him, which from the beginning of the world to the resurrection of Christ was the last day of the week, Saturday, and from the resurrection of Christ was changed into the first day of the week, which in Scripture is called the Lord's Day, and is to be continued to the end of the world as the Christian Sabbath. So we have the Westminster Confession articulating this, and I think I also have here Spurgeon's one of Spurgeon's catechism questions. This was question 51. It gives you distinctly Baptistic perspective, British perspective. How is the Sabbath to be sanctified? The answer, the Sabbath is to be sanctified by a holy resting of all that day, even from such worldly employments and recreations as are lawful on other days, and spending the whole time in public and private exercises of God's worship, except so much as is taken up in the works of necessity and mercy. You might react against some of the particulars in some of these statements, but I just want you to understand that the bulk of believers in the early church, up until the very near present, have believed and understood that the Sabbath was an instruction for the church, not just for the Jews. It's part of God's unchanging moral laws. So we need to give attention to that. We ought to feel the weight of that. The reality is that we push against this. And to me, an interesting question that we're not going to take time to delve into in any great detail, but why did God have to give a command for us to rest? Aren't we just looking forward to the weekends? Unless you're a pastor, I suppose, right? And then the work week starts, a little different cadence. But generally speaking, we would say, oh yeah, I'm all about rest, you know, and I value rest. But the reality is there's a lot of things kind of chafing against that. God's people, the children of Israel, certainly got into trouble with that over and over again, especially when they were living among pagan cultures who were setting up their shops and selling things on the Sabbath. And there was constantly that tendency for Israel to step back into working on the Sabbath. It was really hard to rest. Why is that? Why did God have to actually command Sabbath rest? I boiled it down to two things. You might add to this list. You might disagree with this list. We're stepping out of the realm of Scripture into the realm of my speculation. But I think two of the biggest reasons are pride and fear. Pride, we sometimes think we are more important than we are. Like if I don't do this, if I don't respond to this email right now, then my company's going to fall apart, right? Or maybe fear, if I don't take care of this, you know, what's going to happen? I'm going to get behind, or I'm going to, you know, whatever those motivations are. But I think we just have to be honest of what's going on in our heart and why we are sometimes often resistant to rest. There's a reason God had to give a commandment in this domain. It did not come naturally. And so what is it for you that sort of creates the rub? Well, what does it look like? Let's take a few moments here and talk practically speaking. What would this look like? What would it mean to observe the Sabbath, the Christian Sabbath, the Lord's Day? Let me just give you a few guidelines. First, it involves a complete day. The Sabbath is not about going to church for an hour. Okay, the Sabbath involves a 24-hour day out of the week. Right? That is God's design. That is His pattern. Now, interesting to think about that in Jewish culture, the way they would reckon a day was from sundown on the night before. And this has been something that's been helpful for us. I don't feel like you necessarily have to view it this way, but practically speaking, it's been helpful for us to think about it that way. because when we think about Sunday as a family, Sunday is generally only going to be successful and restful if there's been a measure of preparation on Saturday night, right? So every once in a while I'll talk to some bleary-eyed teenagers. Oh, I'm exhausted. I'm like, well, what's going on? Well, I've stayed up all night last night at my friend's house. Well, big shocker there, right? I might be boring, but that's your fault, right? If you can't stay awake. So there's an element of that. If I'm going to set up for a day that's characterized by rest in our house, that means having to get some, you know, kind of think through meal stuff and what that looks like and getting things set aside, getting clothes laid out, so that Sunday can be a day of rest when I don't tackle some of those other normal day-to-day tasks. But it involves a complete day. It involves a ceasing from activities that consume the other 6 days. It involves a ceasing from activities that consume the other 6 days. The word Shabbat, from which we get Sabbath, this has the idea of ceasing. Stopping. Dr. Greer, some of you might know Dr. Jim Greer. He was a professor at the seminary, brilliant theologian, very influential in my life and my ministry training. But he would often relate his childhood stories of having grown up in a very austere Scottish Presbyterian home, where the Sabbath was observed and they would go to church and they would do nothing else. Like, sit in your room, be quiet. And he talked about how it was a day that he used to dread as a kid, you know, when the Christian Sabbath would roll around. But it's not, and he came to understand this as he grew in his understanding of Scriptures, it's not a day of inactivity. It's not a ceasing of all activity. It's not a day of just quiet stillness. But it is a ceasing of the normal activities that occupy the other 6 days of the week. So if you're an accountant, you're not working the books on the Sabbath, on Sunday. If you are a student, there's another one for us. Our kids do their homework, finish their homework on Saturday. We're human. It doesn't always happen, but that is our aspirational goal, okay? And we work at that so that Sunday is a different sort of day. They don't have that hanging over them. They don't have to work at that. They can get that work done on Saturday and enjoy the day. I was talking to somebody the other day who even they shaped their reading. Now, they have certain reading that they do, not necessarily because they're required to do it for work, but it's in that domain. And they said, I don't do that reading on Sunday. I read a novel. I read a classic. I read, you know, I read something that I just enjoy reading, that stretches my imagination, that rejuvenates my mind. That's a pretty good rule of thumb, even to think of how that would maybe translate into something like the things that you read. It should be a different day. The types of activities you engage in are different. So it's not a day of absolute stillness, of inactivity, but it is a ceasing of the activities that occupied the previous 6 days. Marva Dawn has written extensively on this. I love this quote. I think it's a pretty good definition, like a working definition. To cease working on the Sabbath means to quit laboring at anything that is work, activity that is enjoyable and freeing, and not undertaken for the purpose of accomplishment qualifies as acceptable. So I'm not engaging in the things that are getting me ahead, getting me an early start on the work week, right? Earning me a little bit of extra money. But if I want to go out and walk through the garden or, you know, we have this interesting dynamic too in our culture where a lot of our work is not manual labor. You know, in a biblical context, you're doing manual labor. You're working with your hands. And so to cease from that is to cease from physical labor. What do you do if you sit behind a desk 6 days a week? What does Sabbath look like for that person? And I think in some cases it might mean going out and doing some exercise. You know, it's a way of setting that day aside so that it's different. That's part of God's design for rhythm of work and rest. It also involves an engagement in corporate worship pattern there in some of the scripture passages I've given you, the references I've given you. We see that that was clearly part of their pattern for the Lord's Day. It also involves the works of mercy and necessity. This, you saw some of this language even in Spurgeon's catechism. This is pretty common language in the Westminster documents as well. Mercy and necessity. Mercy, that's what our students are doing at Oxford Manor today, right? They're going to go do some activity. They're going to move some chairs around. They're going to exert themselves to prepare and organize. They've been organizing the service to conduct that service today. They're going to undergo some work. That is a work of mercy. It's a work of coming alongside someone, trying to encourage them to go visit someone in their home would be a great Sunday activity. Someone that you know has been discouraged or lonely or hasn't been able to get out, right? That's a great work of mercy. So again, not a day of inactivity, but a day of a different sort of activity. And then a work of necessity. We have a lot of medical people who have to pull a shift on a Sunday. That's their job, and that's a work of necessity. That big tree that just fell on your house, Marcos, I don't want to hear about the tree on the house, but the tree that fell on the house, and the storm clouds are coming in, and there's a big hole there. Well, you just might need to do some work on the Sabbath. Okay, that's a work of necessity. Okay, there's certain times you just have to respond. EMT gets pulled away, right, because of an accident. That's a work of necessity and a work of mercy. So we understand some of the things that should mark that day. And again, if we look at the pattern of Jesus, we can get a glimpse into those types of activities. Well, I want to, as we close, we've just got a few minutes here. I want to ask how the Sabbath reflects. I'll say, first of all, I went in these different order, didn't I, Q? You should have flagged me of this. So, yeah, here we go. Here we go. Is Sabbath rest important to God? We talk about how your work matters. Your work matters. I want to crystallize this again for you as we close, that your rest matters to God as well. Here's just a quick summary overview of the first four commandments. You shall worship the Lord your God, the first commandment, who we are to worship. And the text clearly outlines who is to be worshipped. The second commandment, how we are to worship. No graven image. We're not free to depict God in pictorial form or in the form of a sculpture, because any attempt to depict God lessens God. It cheapens God. It makes Him less than who He truly is. And so there's certain parameters in terms of how we are to worship God. The third commandment, don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain, right? Addresses how we are to speak of God in ways that convey respect and honor. And then the fourth commandment, which we're looking at today, when we worship God, talks about a designated time that has been set aside to acknowledge God as Creator and acknowledge that we are creatures. Acknowledge that God is King and we are His subjects. So again, we see just within the context there of Exodus chapter 20 that God cares about the Sabbath. It's articulated in no uncertain terms, His expectations. And then I also just pulled out a passage here. I mean, we see this in different places where God speaks to the importance of the Sabbath. One of the more powerful places is at the end of 2 Chronicles. It's the people of Israel are being taken into exile, right? It's a really dark time. And there's reasons why God is allowing them to be taken into exile. One of the reasons is their violation of Sabbath. They did not respond to God's commands in this domain. There's a lot of far-reaching commands. Even employees, in our context, should not be made to work on the Sabbath. And so all these things, even the land, they were to let the land lie fallow 1 year out of seven. That's a hard one, right? You're a farmer. That's profit right there. I'm just going to leave. I'm not going to plant anything there for a whole year. And they didn't do that. And so when you come to the exile, it says this. It says, God took into exile in Babylon those who had escaped from the sword, and they became servants to him and to his sons until the establishment of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed its Sabbaths. All the days that it lay desolate, it kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. So God says, you're behind on your Sabbath rest. And if you're not going to give the land rest, then I will. That's a pretty strong statement about what God thinks about Sabbath and the importance of rest. If we were to go a step further, I think one of the other passages I've given you in your notes there is Hebrews chapter 4. Just how this area intersects with the gospel. It's a powerful section there in Hebrews 4 describing Israel. The Hebrew slaves are brought out of Egypt and brought into the promised land. But it reminds us that many of them fell in the wilderness, right, because of their unbelief. But the promised land is Shabbat. It's Sabbath. It's God's Sabbath rest. It's what they've been waiting for all those years. It's God's blessing. It's shalom. It's the fullness of joy and wholeness. In a sense, that promised land represents Sabbath rest. It's a picture of salvation. And the text goes on to say there in Hebrews 4, there is yet, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. This whole idea is part of our great hope of everything being set right again and enjoying the fullness and blessing of God's creation. The Sabbath day, one day each week, is just a little taste of that. It's just a little opportunity to have a feast day, to have a day that I don't engage in my other labors, but it points me ahead to a much greater, robust truth that God has provided and established a Sabbath rest for the people of God. Find yourself anxious for that rest sometimes? Weeks like we just went through with Johnny, we find ourselves longing for the Sabbath rest that is still promised to the people of God. And so yes, there's the issue of Sabbath observance, and for your own good as well as for God's glory, you need to embrace a robust view not only of work but of rest. There's also a greater issue at stake here of salvation and God's promise of Sabbath rest. The Sabbath is not something to be avoided. It's not something that we approach with a degree of resentment or begrudgingly, but we approach the Sabbath as a great opportunity to enjoy God's good gifts and to be rejuvenated after a week of labors. So what needs to change for you? In either the patterns of work or the patterns of rest, what are the areas that need to be adjusted as you seek to have God's perspective on work and rest?